You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. When the Oregon Department of Forestry deploys its people to a wildland fire, they battle more than just the flames. The same is true of all firefighters, of course. And when police and health professionals are dispatched to respond to an emergency, they don't always know what kind of circumstances they'll encounter. But they arrive on the scene ready to do the job. Over time, how does that affect their mental well-being? Across all of our nation and our communities, wherever we live, we have local heroes who are ready to respond to our emergencies whenever we cry out for help. But who responds when our heroes need help? My two guests have answers. Bob Arnsmeyer is the training coordinator for the Oregon Department of Forestry's Peer Support Team of Southern Oregon. Welcome, Bob.
Hi, Mike.
And Holly Migas is the executive director of Responder Life. Welcome, Holly.
Thank you.
So, Bob, let's start with you. Tell me about your work with ODF Peer Support Team.
Yeah, I've been a member of our peer support team. This is my second year. I've had numerous deployments over the last couple of years, and I've really found it gratifying and enjoy being a part of it and helping others through, you know, some of the unseen challenges that they have.
What do you mean by deployment?
If a district or a fire feels a need to have peer support come in and support their folks, then our group is summoned, and we will choose the right person for the job and go out and assist as needed. So whether we go to a field office, or directly to a fire, it could lead us anywhere in Oregon and sometimes outside of Oregon.
What triggers that?
It all depends, I would say. It could be, a critical incident that has happened. It could be a group response. And, it just, like I said, it depends on the type of situation that we're going to. And then we will, deploy wherever needed.
And you're the training coordinator, right?
Yes, I am the training coordinator for our firefighters in Southern Oregon. I do assist with some logistical coordination, some record keeping when it comes to training. But my primary day job is training coordinator for our firefighters, and I do help with peer support as well.
And how do you choose the peers that are part of the support team?
Initially, the first round of recruitments was it was a call out to all folks that might be interested, or if you thought you of somebody that would be a good fit for the team, somebody would nominate them. And then this last year, we did a recruitment for people, and it was pretty much word of mouth within our group of current peer supporters to select folks that we thought would be a good fit and that would be interested. And so we did a call out to the folks that we identified, and then the folks would, either accept or decline invitation to our group.
I'm still a little fuzzy on what they do. So you get deployed someplace to do what?
Correct. So we might go and speak one-on-one with a peer that needs support. We might go and set in on a staff meeting or an all-employees meeting to talk about the program. And, from that contact with a peer that needs support, we might then at that point elevate and suggest further care, higher level of care than we're able to give. And, again, it's voluntary on the person being supported, their acceptance of the care that we give. So we might elevate that, or we might set in with them. And I like to describe it as a good active listening session. And we'll try to help that peer whatever way will fit that, circumstance.
I like that. That's a good description. Holly, you lead the organization Responder Life. Tell me about it.
Correct. Yeah, so Responder Life, we are an organization that we service the mental health and well-being and emotional support of first responders all across Oregon and Washington. And we have the privilege of working with ODF as well. And so that constitutes selecting, helping develop their peer support teams, as well as like what Bob was talking about. Excuse me, when there's a critical incident, we also can deploy, whether we have well-being specialists, chaplains, or mental health specialists, so clinicians who are what we call culturally competent, which means they understand the culture for which they're going into, whether that's law enforcement, structure fire, wildland fire, EMS, because they either have been a first responder themselves, have family members and are closely associated, and they've dove in really deep into the first responding world. And so we help with referrals. Sometimes it's really hard to get referrals to clinicians. And so we are able to help with our group of clinicians that we work with to get people in sooner when they're in a crisis. And when you're a first responder and you have that layered trauma that has come and that's just building, building, building over all the critical incidents that you've responded to over the course of your career, man, you need some help getting in quick sometimes. So we do that. We help with substance use and getting people into recovery programs. And just being available for telehealth, sometimes like what Bob was talking about, sometimes people just need to do a debrief, right? Sometimes it's in a big group setting with a critical incident debrief, but sometimes it's just, hey, can I tell you how hard this has been? And making sure that that's a confidential space. And that's one of the most important things about peer support and our work is that it's all confidential.
So the peer support team is like the first responder for the first responders.
That's exactly correct.
My guests are Bob Arnsmeyer and Holly Mikus. Bob is the training coordinator for the peer support team at ODF, and Holly is the executive director of the organization Responder Life. Now, I can't imagine what the first responders are going through. I know how it feels when there's an emergency that I have to respond to. My heart races, my mind goes into overdrive searching for the best way to respond while remaining calm. I guess I feel fortunate to live my daily life almost oblivious to the fact that our first responders are dealing with high-level stress of emergencies on a regular basis. Bob, what's that like?
Oh, you know, it's, you know, only speaking for the wildland community, it's a lot of ups and downs, I would say. Our firefighters might go from just a nothing day where it's checking their equipment, maybe doing some basic fire training at their office, to, you know, a deployment to a local fire where they immediately ramp up and get into, you know, potentially high stress modes, and, you know, which includes some pretty dangerous situations. That would include, you know, dealing with a high fire situation to, you know, there might be a medical emergency or a medical situation. They might be dealing with landowners or homeowners that are having their homes threatened, their lifestyles, their pets, their livestock, their well-beings, their timber. So, you know, it's an up and down mood or environment for our first responders. So, you know, they should have a strong mental capacity, and, you know, sometimes that doesn't always happen. And that's where we'll step in and try to help them fill in some gaps.
Yeah, I can imagine everyone doesn't have the same level of capacity to keep doing that. Holly, you deal with lots of first responders across a wide variety of different kinds. What do you see?
Yeah, man, it is everything from, you know, if you're talking a structure fire person who responds to a motor vehicle accident that, you know, turns out to be a pretty simple cleanup and, you know, putting some you know, chemicals down on the ground just to absorb some radiator fluid to pediatric deaths, you know, within the next 15 to 20 minutes they might be called out on. And then later that night, it could be a house fire, and then it could still be another death or suicide. And I think about that across the board for law enforcement as well. You know, the average person sees maybe 3 to 5 critical incidents in their lifetime, on average, across the nation. And this means for some of the rural departments who don't see much to the metro areas, affecting us as first responders, we can see over 350 what become critical incidents to us in our lifetime. That is a lot of layered trauma for them.
That is a lot. I have to say, my wife and I, we were on the road just earlier this week, and we passed an accident. An 18-wheeler had T-boned a car, and we know that that was not a good thing for that driver. The first responders were still still coming. We got a chance to see what they saw, and I can't imagine seeing that all the time, over and over, because I can still see that in my mind.
Yeah, and that's exactly what Bob and the peer supporters across the state are doing, is that it's that replaying in your mind. And so what we do is, as peer supporters and as well-being specialists and as therapists, we come in and we help with some skill sets to be able to say, hey, here's some coping mechanisms. First of all, let's get it out of your head. Let's talk about it. You're not going to scare me. So what did you see? What were the facts? What are your thoughts? What are your feelings? What are your reactions? And now, how do we re-enter into regular life, right? How do you go back to your life? Because what you've seen will affect you. It will affect whether it's your sleeping, whether it's your eating, your emotional response, all those things. And so the whole goal is to be able to keep our first responders healthy, not just from the first day that they either take the job or are sworn in, but past and through retirement. The suicide rate for first responders accelerates in the first 4 months of their retirement. So if we can teach them coping skills and healthy engagement in being aware of their emotional health, being aware of what those critical incidents do, if we can teach them that during their career and make it normal for them, then when they retire and when they move past their career, they can take those coping skills into that time, and the suicide rate begins to come down.
And that's why we have these support teams, right?
That's right. That's exactly right.
So, Bob, how do you sustain your team? They're volunteers, right?
Yes. Yeah. You know, granted, they are, you know, we're on the clock when we, you know, are performing these functions. But as far as being a member of the team and choosing to do this, it is, you are a volunteer for sure.
Well, how does the work that you do for your team translate to other places around the country? I mean, there are first responders everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and when you talk about, you know, around the country, you know, we are starting to partner with some of our nearby states. And so, you know, we all are trained for the most part to the same standards. And, you know, we know how to engage, not just here in Oregon. And, you know, I had a deployment this year myself to the state of Alaska, and, you know, it was a seamless transition going into another region even, and, you know, putting my skill set to work. And, I think it's a great thing that we're able to share our resources.
Well, we only have about a minute left. Holly, what sustains your organization, and how will you grow to meet the need?
Yeah, we are always bringing on more well-being specialists, more clinicians, getting the word out to people, exactly with what we're doing today, saying to those first responders, hey, you're not alone. We see you. You don't have to pull yourself up by your bootstraps. There are people who get where you are and can walk you through it and with you. And so getting the word out, being available, having teams like ODF's peer support team, being able to partner with other agencies, with other states, with the federal organizations that we have, to be able to say, let's be in this together and let's do it well. We want you to be healthy.
Okay, well, we're so grateful for you both. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it.
My guests were Bob Arnsmeyer from the peer support team at ODF and Holly Migas, Executive Director of Responder Life. I'm Mike Green. You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of JPR.